Welcome to the Three Pillars of D&D cast. I'm Emma.
I'm Jesse.
I'm Tyler.
And today, we're going to be discussing the Warlock.
Warlock is a class that's driven about by its lesser power, or it trades, it makes a pact with an extra planar being in order to get power. Sometimes it trades its soul, or it's, you know, it's a life force, or it does, like, errands for, like, the elder being thing, you know, gets, like, Cthulhu bread.
There you go.
To begin your class, you get, 1d8, for your hit dice. You get light armor, simple weapons, wisdom and charisma, saving throws, and some skills. Two skills.
You get to choose two skills from Arcana, Deception, History, Intimidation, Investigation, Nature, and Religion. You generally want to flavor those to go with your otherworldly patron, which is what you choose at level 1. So you get your subclass at level 1 with this class.
Yeah.
Now,
And your otherworldly patron, there's a lot of things. There's, Archfey, the Celestial, Fathomless, Fiend, Genie, Great Old One, Hexblade, Undead, Undying.
Yeah, and that's going to be spread between the Player's Handbook, Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, and Xanathar's Guide to Everything.
Also, I think there's one at Sword Coast.
Oh, and there's one on the Sword Coast I think is not anywhere else as well.
I think it's the...
I don't remember which one it is.
Undying, maybe?
Maybe it's the Undying, yeah.
We don't know.
We don't care. all right. So, one of the first powers of the Warlock is Patch Magic. They get cantrips. They get two at level 1, including the Eldritch Blast, which is unique to the Warlock.
It's like the best cantrip in the game.
Yeah, pretty much. You get... third one at 4th level, and you get a 4th one at 10th level. Spell slots, you have 1 at the 1st level, 2 at 2nd level, 3 at 11th level, and 4 at 17th level.
Your spell slots are very few and far between.
Exactly. Now, your slot level, this is important, because it's another thing that you need to the Warlock is, it's 1st level at level 1, second at third level, third at fifth level, fourth at seventh level, and fifth at ninth level.
All slots go up at the same time. So, like, other spellcasters, they have some first slots, and there's some second slots, and Warlocks only have just one level, and it goes up. That's the advantage of Warlocks. They have very few slots, but they're all at max level.
Exactly.
And sadly, their max level is 5.
Yeah, which is... So basically, if you're playing a campaign that's, you know, 1st through 10th level, your Warlock's probably always going to be powerful. Mm-hmm. But once you get to that 10th to 20th level, the power of the Warlock kind of tapers off when it comes to their spells.
Yeah,
but their invocations are pretty powerful at higher levels.
To make a Warlock powerful, it's widely regarded as a weak class, but it's really not. You just need to build it in a specific way, which can be unfun to some players.
Exactly. Now, also in Patch Magic, they have spells known, which means that they have a limited number of spells known, kind of like sorcerers are the same way. Wizards can get as many as they want, basically, but they have a limited number of spells. It's a pretty good amount. It's one more than your level up until, like, level 10, and then it's, like, whatever your other level. So you still have a pretty good repertoire of spells early on. Your spellcasting ability is Charisma, and your spellcasting focus is Arcane, which I don't know why they make such a big deal about the type of spell focus you have, spellcasting focus, but they do.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, like a druid just needs like something natural to cast their spells through, like a stick. But like wizards and such need like very terrible. Are tailored, like, magical items. They can't just be... They have to be, like, kind of infused with magic.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Tasha's Cauldron of Everything adds some additional warlock spells at level 1. Mostly they're going to be like your Bladesinger spells, mostly the cantrips from the optional class features. Yeah, it would be like the cantrips from the Bladesinger.
Yeah,
they added the Mind Sliver spell. And then it's a lot of the summoning spells that they added as well. That's what most of them are for those additional spells. They're ones that don't make sense for the warlock.
Yeah, they had a lot of hexblade spells on those. Like, you know, Blade of Disaster.
Oh, okay. Well, those were all, like, unique to the hexblade before, and now they're for everybody.
No, like, they seem like they would go with a hexblade warlock.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
A hexblade warlock would take, like, these.
Yeah, and I think that's why they added so many of the Bladesinger spells to the warlock to really complement the hexblade, I think. So, second level.
At second level, you need two Eldritch invocations of your choice. The invocations are detailed at the end of the class description, and then at 5th, 7th, 9th, 12th, 15th, and 18th level, well, you get another one. That's 8 in total, and there's a ton of different invocations. And when you get a level, you get to choose one invocation and change it.
If an Eldritch invocation has prerequisites, you must meet them, obviously. You can use, if you meet the level that the prerequisite is, you can get it at the same level, basically. It's a minor legal text, blah, blah, blah. So what I've done is I've broken the invocations up into 4 basic categories because the way they're listed in the book is very confusing, in my opinion. They do them in alphabetical order, which is good if you're looking for a particular one, but if you want to actually know how to make your character, I think the order that we're going to present them in is going to make more sense. So there is the prerequisite of a level only. There's a prerequisite of you must have the Eldritch Blast cantrip. There's a prerequisite of using the hex spell or a warlock feature that causes curses. There's a few of those. Or the prerequisite of a particular pact.
Invocations that require Eldritch Blast is Agonizing Blast, which means you add your Charisma modifier to the damage it deals on hit. Eldritch Spear, which means its range is 300 feet. Grasp of Hadar, which is from Vanzar's Guide to Everything. Once on each of your turns, when you hit a creature, you can move that creature in a straight line 10 feet closer to you. Lance of Lethargy, Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Once on each of your turns, when you hit a creature with your Eldritch Blast, obviously, you can reduce the creature's speed by 10 feet until the end of your next turn. Repelling Blast, which means you can push the creature up 10 feet away from you in a straight line.
So, I personally like the Grasp of Hadar and the Repelling Blast, because depending on the build of Warlock you have, you're either pushing them away from you so that you can maintain your long-range combatness, or Grasp of Hadar is for if you happen to have a close-range warlock that you pull them into you so you can start messing them up pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And since the version Lethargy reduce their speed so they can't resist it, or it's hard to resist it as well. Because after you move them, it's hard to perform a move back.
Yeah, there's that. And I think if you have, like, one of those effects that, like, say, puts fire or poison or whatever in an area, you can make it so they can't get out of that area. So, because they're a lot slower. So that has advantages, too.
Yeah.
All right, so next type for level, still with level 2, is invocations with the prerequisite of level only.
Okay, so first we start out with armor ship. Which you can cast as mage armor on yourself at will. Beast speech. Each you can speak to animals at will, like beguiling influence, and you gain proficiency in deception and persuasion.
Which is what I really like because I love getting skills. So I think that's a really fun one. And I think it's the only invocation that gives you skills. I wish there had been more.
Yeah. Devil's Sight, which gives you can see normally in darkness, both magical and non-magical, to a distance of 120 feet, improved dark vision, 120 feet.
And that's really good because if you have a way to cast the darkness spell, which don't believe is a spell that warlocks normally have. You can basically make everyone blind, but you're fine. It's a really powerful combo. You do it?
Do warlocks have darkness?
Oh, they do.
They do?
Yep, it's a second level spell.
Okay, so yeah. And then Eldritch Mind, which is from Tasha's, and you have advantage in constitution saving throws that you made to maintain concentration on a spell. This is so powerful.
It's similar to, the Warcaster feat?
Yeah.
That lets you do that. So if you don't want to waste your feat on that, you can just take an invocation, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, but this is a second level invocation, so you can get it before the feat.
Exactly. And then if you do get the feat later on, because you have like the other advantages of it, you can switch this out for a different invocation later.
Actually, which is one of them out at the exact same time, for sure.
Yeah. Which one of the best things about the Warlock, and it's something that I hadn't quite put together until I made this character this time, that was one of the really powerful things about invocations.
Yeah. Eldritch Sight, you get to detect magic at will. As a runekeeper, you can read all writing.
That is a really important social interaction ability. We haven't really talked a lot about the pillars in regard to all these abilities. Any of those previous ones really big on exploration or social interaction? Beast speech, social interaction.
Social. Are beast speech social, beguiling influence is social, and that's really it.
Alright.
Oh, and detect magic, I guess. So.
Obviously, if we don't bring it up, it's combat related.
Yeah.
All right.
Cast false life in, or fiendish vigor. You can cast false life in yourself at will as a first level spell, without spending a spell slot or material component. This is so powerful. You just always keep a barrier of 8 temporary hit points.
Real quick, is false life a bonus? Is that a bonus action or is that a
action?
An action.
It's what you do before combat. I would just like keep it up going all the time.
What I'm saying is like once it powers down, you can use a bonus action to trigger or
no, it's an action.
It's an action. Okay.
Yeah. Gaze of Two Minds, you can use your action to touch a loin humanoid and perceive through its senses until you end your next turn. As long as the creature is on the same plane of existence as you, you can use your action on subsequent turns to maintain this connection, extending the duration until the end of your next turn while perceiving through the other creature's senses. You benefit from any special senses possessed by the creature, and you are blinded and deafened to your own surroundings.
So this has a lot of applications outside of combat. I don't know why you'd want to use this in combat, to be honest.
No, you would not. You would never use this in combat. What you would use is, like, as, you know, you could, use it.
I mean, now, if you were in combat and one of your party members, say, had dark vision and you didn't, that could be useful. If they had blind fighting and you didn't, that could be useful as well.
Blind fighting.
The problem is it uses your action to extend it, so I'm not sure how much you could actually do. As a defensive measure, it might help because it keeps you from having disadvantage or your opponent from having advantage on hitting you or whatever, but you wouldn't be able to do much. But outside of combat, obviously, you can use that to send somebody in as a spy or something like that if you have control of them in some way. Yeah. You can see through their senses. Basically, if you can use it outside of combat, you know, if you take control of somebody, you can see through their senses, or
if you have a party member or seduce the evil noble, you can take notes.
Yes, you can.
Not scary faces. You can cast Sky Self at will without spending a spell slot. Misty Vision, you can cast Silent Image at will without expending a spell slot. and see for 5 fades and cast Bane once using a Warlock spell slot. It can't do so again until you finish a long rest.
Okay, so, by the way, in the future, if we say just a spell and at will, it's true with every one of these Warlock abilities, you don't expend a spell slot.
Yeah.
So that we can just save ourselves some effort and time there. But just letting you as the audience know that. Now, I do not like these spells in general that you have to expend a Warlock spell slot to use. I understand the idea is that it opens you up to spells you don't normally have as a Warlock, but it feels like...
I'm not going to spend an invocation to learn a spell I can only use once a day.
Yeah, it doesn't feel right. Like, there are some spells that might be worth it, later ones. Like Polymorph. But unless you really, really want that spell, it's not the best invocation.
Okay.
I think they should just let you use it once per day without using a spell slot. I'd be fine with that.
Once
a long rest would be fine.
That's like a thing of the Warlock. So you get a lot of abilities that, like, you get a ton of abilities, like, once a day, or once a long rest, or once a short rest, you know?
Yeah.
That's how they get their higher levels for alert.
At third level, you get to choose a Pat Boon. There are four types of Pat Boons if you get Tasha's Cauldron of Everything.
Okay.
Which adds...
Who did that?
So there's Path of the Blade, Path of the Chain, Path of the Talisman, and Path of the Tome. And I'm going to kind of describe what each of those are as we go through each one. And I'm going to go with what I've done is I put the invocations, all of the invocations that apply to that particular path.
Oh, Lord.
In with it, because I think that makes more sense.
Okay.
Because that way you kind of know what options you have.
Yeah.
Because it gets real confusing the way they set it up in the book. You're just looking at a bunch of gobbledygook when it comes to the invocations, in my opinion. So, we'll start with the Pact of the Blade. You can use your action to create a pact weapon in your empty hand. You can choose the form that it takes. You generally want to create a melee weapon with it. You are proficient with it. It counts as magical for the purposes of overcoming resistance and immunity. Your pact weapon disappears if it's more than 5 feet away from you for a minute or more. So you can still throw it, but unless you grab it quickly, it's going to disappear if it sits there for more than a minute. If you use this feature again for some reason, so say you throw your sword at somebody and make another one, the one you made disappears. You can dismiss the weapon, which is a no action action, which is nice.
Yeah.
Or if you die. So,
nice.
There you go. So you can technically lend this weapon to somebody else, but it would only be for like a minute and you wouldn't be able to use it again. Some applications there, but not very often it's going to come up. You can transform one magic weapon that you own into a pact weapon by performing a special ritual, while you hold it, obviously. You perform the ritual over an hour. You can do that during your short rest. You can dismiss the weapon, putting it into an extra dimensional space, and it appears whenever you create your pact weapon thereafter, which is a good way for you to sneak a weapon in to some place that, like, would search you and take your weapons away. So that's a good use outside of combat.
Yeah.
For combat? You know what I mean. you can't use it on an artifact or a sentient weapons. The weapon ceases being your pact weapon when you die, obviously. You perform the ritual on a different weapon, or you can use the ritual to break your bond to it. I don't know, in case you need to give it to somebody or whatever.
Screw you, sword.
The weapon appears at your feet if it's an extra dimensional space when the bond breaks.
Okay.
So, if you kill a warlock and all of a sudden a weapon shows up, it was probably their bonded weapon. There you go. More you know. Alright, next. Okay, now the invocations with the prerequisite of the Pact of the Blade. At third level, when you get this pact, you can choose the improved pact weapon, which is from Xanathar's Guide to Everything. You can use your pact weapon as a spellcasting focus for your warlock spells, which, when you combine it with the invocation we had earlier, basically lets you have the feat War Caster.
Yeah.
It also, it gains a plus one bonus to its attack rolls and damage rolls, unless it already had that because it was a magic weapon. And the weapon you conjure can now be a short bow, a long bow, a light crossbow, or a heavy crossbow, in addition to being a melee weapon.
So basically, you just get a plus one weapon.
Yeah. And the spellcasting focus is kind of nice.
Yeah.
At fifth level, you can use the Eldritch Smite, which is also for Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Once per turn, when you hit a creature with a pact weapon, you can expend a warlock spell slot to deal an extra 1d8 force damage to the target, plus another 1d8 per level of the spell slot, and you can knock the target prone if it's huge or smaller. Now, we've had debates on whether this is actually good or not. You only get so many warlock spells, so expending one, so you can do, you know, up to an extra 5d8 points of force damage.
Does not prone, though.
What? Yeah. Is like, not the best, but the knocking prone of huge or smaller is actually pretty, pretty cool.
Huge.
That's a pretty big chunk of enemies, especially at lower levels. I mean, at fifth level, you're probably going to run into huge things occasionally. Yeah. So, it might be really good. You're probably going to end up switching this out later, but I think at lower levels, you'd probably want to use it.
Yeah.
Also, at fifth level is Thirsty Blade. This one you're going to want. You can attack with your pact weapon twice instead of once whenever you take the attack action on your turn.
Yeah, and this...
If you don't take this, you're dumb. I'm sorry.
This is why you basically have to choose pact the blade if you do hex blade.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, at fifth level, you're going to want to take this so you can basically be on par with any other combat classes.
I'm going to take over for the last one. 12th level, Light Drinker. When you hit a creature with your pack weapon, the creature takes an extra necrotic damage equal to your Crimson Outlier. This is so bad.
Yeah, well, I don't understand it. Yeah.
The 12th level?
Yeah, and at most you're going to get 5 hit points if you're maxed out at 20. I mean...
If you have the previous thing, yeah.
Well, yeah. I suppose you could take 10... You could do an extra 10 points of damage per turn if you hit the same creature twice and gain 10 hit points. I don't know. I suppose that kind of adds up.
No, it doesn't say you gain hit points.
Oh. Oh, never mind. No, this really sucks.
You have souls here. You tried to save it, but you couldn't.
I tried to save it. Yeah, if you gained hit points, I think this ability would be good.
Yeah, because then you get to heal yourself. Kill yourself a little. Do a little extra damage, you know. There's a reason why you land. The Paladin Zion Hand ability is still good, even though it's not a lot of people.
Yeah, I think if you did a house rule where you made this better and gave the person the hit points that they steal.
Give hit points, double the damage.
I wouldn't even have to double it. I think gaining 5 hit points every time you hit.
Still better on vacation.
It's still better, but I think it would make it almost worth taking.
Yeah.
And currently, though, I think it sucks.
Never take this.
All right, who wants to do Patch of the Chain?
I can do it.
All right.
You learn the 5 familiar spell and can cast it as a ritual. The spells only count against the number of spells you know. And then you get a couple extra forms for your familiar. It can be an imp, shadow dragon, closet, or sprite. And when you take the attack action on your turn, you can forgo one of your own attacks to allow your familiar to make one attack with its reaction. Oh.
Yeah, that really hurts in the action economy. Now, there's an invocation that makes it better, but... Eesh.
Yeah. Action economy?
Yeah, the action economy. You are familiar with the terminology?
Well, I'm not at all, actually. This is something I'm not actually familiar with. Hold on.
Okay.
Okay, so let's explain this to Emma. I think we'll end up cutting this, but...
The action economy is a principle that the side that gets the most, you know, turns and hits is the one that's probably going to win.
So basically what happens here is you forego one action, your action, and then it costs your familiar their reaction, which means it takes up two actions to get one action out of something. It's just like, so it, you end up, you're netting a loss of one action, essentially.
And there's a reason why haste is so good, because it allows you to get more actions.
And then, like, for example, that's why holding off, or whatever the hell it's called, when you hold your action, you spend your action to ready yourself. Yeah, ready, that's what it is. When you ready yourself, you have to use your reaction then to trigger it, so you lose your reaction for the turn. And you've already spent your action, so you spent two actions basically to get one.
Okay.
And that's what we're talking about, the action economy. That's also why you'll see very super powerful monsters have lair actions and legendary actions. It's so that they can keep up with parties of like five people that are whacking them. They're powerful, but unless they got those extra actions, they get their asses kicked every time.
Okay.
So that's the action economy.
Okay. Yeah, and I have to do something on like certain terminology for D&D.
Now you know. Yeah. Now you know? Okay.
Isn't the fact that change so bad is you can already get the fun familiar spell, being able to forgo your action and make it use its reaction so it can make another attack is bad. And while the extra forms it does get are good, being able to fly is really good for familiar, it's just not worth it.
Yeah, the closet in particular is kind of cool because it can transform into a variety of different things.
I love that.
So it's cool, and I think honestly, if I was like, character, like if I was a DM, and someone wanted to use, say, a gazer or other quarter CR monsters, in addition, I'd just let them choose whatever they wanted.
Like, if they're a good old one, if they could take gazers.
Yeah, I mean, anything that's really appropriate to whatever path they were using, I'd let them choose other optional forms. I think one of the advantages here is you can cast it as a ritual, which means it doesn't count as one of your spell slots. And as a warlock, that's really important to be able to cast something as a ritual.
Ritual.
But at the same time, like, yeah, that whole thing sucks. But as I said, you can choose an invocation that makes it better, but that means you not only do you have to take the patch, but you have to take an invocation to make it better, but we'll get to that in a minute.
And, okay, and here's the minute. Okay, so here are the invocations. At level 3, you get the Gift of the Ever-Living Ones. It's from Xanthar's. Whenever you regain hit points while your familiar is within 100 feet of you, treat any dice roll to determine your hit points you're gaining as having rolled their maximum value for you.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially if you are in a campaign where you do a lot of short rests.
Yeah.
I mean, that extra, gaining the max hit points, that's actually pretty useful. And there's a whole feat that gives you that as well. So, yeah, pretty good.
The best bit of the Chain Master from Tasha's. Whenever you cast Find Familiar, you infuse the Summon Familiar with a measure of your Eldritch power, granting the creature the following benefits. The Familiar either gains a flying speed or swimming speed, your choice, of 40 feet. As a bonus action, you can command the Familiar to take the attack action. The Familiar's weapon attacks are considered or magic goal for the purpose of overcoming immunity and resistance to non-magical attacks. If the familiar forces a creature to make a saving throw, it uses your spell save DC. Whenever the familiar takes damage, you can use a reaction to grant it resistance against that damage.
So, this, I think, should just be part of the path of the chain to begin with.
Yeah.
I think if they had done that, I would want to use the back of the chain a lot more.
Yeah.
And the fact that this particular invocation didn't even come up to Tasha's Cauldron of Everything kind of shows you that at least they realized that nobody thought it was good before or something. I don't know.
This is such a powerful invocation, honestly. If it wasn't dragged down by the fact that you need to have this, this act, I'd probably take it.
Yeah, if just having the Find Familiar spell let you gain access to this, I would choose this invocation every time and choose the Find Familiar spell as one of my spells.
Because Find Familiar is a really strong spell.
Yeah.
If they, like, if say like Warlock did not know Black Familiar, this would have been so much more powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, in the right campaign, I want to stress that I think the Path of the Chain is good. If you're talking about information gathering,
yes.
I think this is a very good NPC mm-hmm. pact. I think, like, you know, your cult leader is going to do very well with this particular.
Also, your campaign would be really good.
Yeah, it would be. You know, for the right campaign, this is very good. And I do want to stress that while Path of the Blade was definitely more obviously for combat, more than anything else. So, the last one you can choose at third level is Voice of the Chainmaster. You can communicate telepathically with your familiar and perceive through your familiar's senses as long as you are on the same plane of existence. Additionally, while perceiving through your familiar's senses, you can also speak with your familiar in your own voice, even if your familiar is normally incapable of speech. Now, that's cool. Like, yeah. I don't know if it's useful so much. I mean, you can kind of get some good uses out of it in the right situations, yeah. But it can also really just freak somebody out. That can be kind of fun. So, I think definitely for social interaction, that's a definite win.
Oh, yeah.
15th level, chains a Cursory. You can cast Hold Monster at will, targeting a Celestial, Fiend, or Elemental without expending a spell slot or material components. You must finish a long rest before you can use an invocation on the same creature again.
See, and this is how all the other ones should be phrased. Doesn't expend a spell slot, you can use it once. Well, no, you can just use it as many times as you want. You just can't use it on the same creature.
Yeah.
Wow, that's even better.
Yeah, this is so strong. Because in high-level campaigns, you probably will be fighting Celestials, Fiends, or Elementals. Those are typically high-level monsters.
Yeah, I mean, if your DC is high enough, this could be a very useful ability. I can see myself definitely using this one.
Okay, so Pact of the Talisman. Your Patreon gives you an amulet, an amulet or a talisman that can aid the wearer when the need is great. When the wearer fails an ability check, they can add a D4 on the roll, potentially turning the roll into a success. This benefit can be used a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and all expended uses are restored when you finish a long rest.
Which is nice. That's a pretty good ability.
Oh, yeah. If you lose it, you can perform a one-hour ceremony to receive a replacement from your Patreon. This ceremony can be performed during a short or long rest, and it destroys the previous amulet, and it turns to ash when you die.
All right, and so when it comes to, you know, expiration, social interaction, and combat, this talisman is good for all of them because it's ability checks. Yes. So that's a lot of versatility. You can use it in just about any campaign. So I really like that feature of the talisman. It makes it very versatile. So
invocations that are part of a pack of the talisman, which is all in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. You only get the talisman from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. Rebuke of the Talisman. When the rare of a talisman is hit by an attacker you can see within 30 feet of you, you can use your reaction to deal psychic damage to the attacker equal to your proficiency bonus and push it up to 10 feet away from the talisman wearer.
So that's another one where you can, like the repelling blast from the Eldritch Blast build, basically.
At 7th level, you get protection from the talisman. When the wearer of your talisman fails a saving throw, they can add a D4 to the roll, potentially turning the saving to a success. This benefit can be used to restore a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and all expended uses are restored to your long rest.
Wait, this was already ability, right?
No. One's ability checks, the other one's saving throws.
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So I want to say real quick before I finish this, it like specifies when the wearer of your talisman, so it could be anybody in your party or even an enemy, that can access these abilities.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, have my talisman for now. It's pretty good. Like, just make sure you give it back to me, bro. And then they get all your abilities that you have along. Well.
Yeah, so in the right situations, you might give up your talisman in order to help out your I think that's really good.
So the last invocation, so there are literally not much to this, which I really like that, actually. Small, and it's easier to find. Which is Bond of the Talismans. While someone else is wearing your talisman, you can use your action to teleport to the unoccupied space closest to them, provided the two of you are on the same plane of existence. The wearer of your talisman can do the same thing, using their action to teleport to you. The teleportation can be used a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and all expended uses are restored when you finish a long rest.
Okay, so this is great for exploration.
Oh yeah, you can send somebody, like, you know, maybe somebody smaller than you to fit in a corridor, and then, like, you know, they go and they sneak through the vents, and then they all of a sudden come up into this giant closet, and then you're like, teleportation time, shaboom.
Exactly. And you can combine it with that invocation earlier that you see through their senses.
Yeah.
And then you know when they were through the thing, then you could teleport to them. I mean, you can layer these abilities really well on top of each other to do a lot of interesting and deep things with this particular class. So that's kind of cool.
Pack the Tome. Your patron gives you a green orb called Book of Shadows, and when you gain this feature, you gain 3 cantrips from any class. So just 3 cantrips, any, doesn't matter what class. And while the book is on your person, you can cast those cantrips at will. They don't count against the number of cantrips you know. Oh, and warlocks already get a lot of cantrips. That adds even more. Yeah,
they count as warlock spells for you.
They count as warlock spells for you. And when the book turns to ash when you die, and if you lose it, you can perform a 1-hour ceremony to see a replacement. This can be performed during a short or long rest, and it destroys the previous book.
That way, if someone steals your book, you can basically do a ritual to take it away from them and get it for yourself.
The invocation and, associated with this fact is Aspect of the Moon. No longer in sleep, and can't be forced to sleep by any means. To gain the benefits of long rest, you can spend all 8 hours doing light activity, such as reading your Book of Shadows or keeping watch.
This is from Xanathar's Guide to Everything, just to point that out. And very powerful, especially if you have a small group. You can do watch every night when everyone gets to sleep, not wasting the time. This is a very cool one. Good for just about anything. Obviously, if you're doing a lot of exploring, like traveling a lot, I think that would be really, really useful. But
yeah. Book of Ancient Secrets. You can now inscribe magical rituals into your Book of Shadows. Choose 2 first-level spells, most have the ritual attack from any class spell list, the 2 need to be from the same list. The spells appear in the book and don't count against some of your spells you know. With your Book Shadows in hand, you can cast the chosen spells as rituals. You can't cast the spells except as rituals, unless you learn them by some other means. You can also cast a warlock spell, you know, as a ritual, if it's a ritual tag. On your adventure, you can just, if you find a spell, you can add it to your book, and, but it has to be a ritual spell. And the spell's level has to be equal or less to half your warlock level, rounded up, of course. And then it takes 2 hours and 50 gold pieces for each level of the spell. So if it's a 9th level spell, that takes 18 hours and 450 gold pieces.
There you go. I like that. I like the fact that it can be from any spell list. I don't think I realized that until just now. Which makes the warlock feel a little more wizardy.
Yeah, it's very wizardy. That ability, because that's what wizards do.
Yeah, and I like that. And, so when you first get it, you get to choose first level spells, and then you can just add more later on. That's really cool. I like that it's limited to ritual tag things, but come on, a warlock doing rituals? That feels very warlocky. it's very cool. I think it has more of a flavor feel to it than it does any particular pillar, but Good flavor.
Bar Scribe. A new page appears in your reading
channel. From Tasha's Cauldron and Everything.
It's from Tasha's. A new page appears, and with your permission, a creature can use its action to write its name on that page. Each which can contain number of names equal to your proficiency bonus. And then you can cast the sending spell to the target whose name is on the page without using a spell slot without using any material. So you can just cast the sending spell. When you do so, you must write the message on the page and the target hears the message in their mind. And if it replies, the message appears on the page rather than in your mind. The writing disappears after 1 minute. And as an action, you can magically erase a name on the page by touching it.
That's really cool, though.
So, I'm getting, like, Harry Potter feels, you know? Like, I think it's the second movie.
Oh, yeah, where Voldemort communicates with Harry.
Through the book.
Yeah, the Chamber of Secrets. Okay,
yeah, Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah, okay. No, that's much like that.
Yeah.
And I've been reading this one book series called Sufficiently Advanced Magic or something. And they communicate through a book that way too. And I really like it, how that's set up. Very, very social interaction, obviously.
Very much. Thing. You can say, hi, what you doing, bro?
You could also use this, in a campaign to basically set up like a telegraph.
Yeah.
Network in your world. You could have warlocks who had the Farscribe invocation and, and you could just have a whole series of communication because, you know, Bobby in California can communicate with Jimmy in New York long distance, so they can just instantly do messages that way.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have a whole system set up where people were paying money to quickly get messages across. You could do some fun stuff with that.
There are
a lot of different ways to spin it, and I really like that one.
Gift of the Protectors from Tasha's. Another new page appears in your book of shadows, and with your permission, a creature can use its action to write its name on the page, which can contain number of names equal to your proficiency bonus. This is a different one, I swear.
Yeah, it just sounds a lot like the other one.
Okay. When any creature whose name is on the page is reduced to 0 hit points, when not killed outright, the creature magically drops to 1 hit point instead. Once his magic is triggered, no creature can benefit until you finish a long rest. And as an action, you can magically erase the name on the page by touching it.
That's really good, though.
Oh, yeah.
That makes you an ultimate, like, a really good support ability. Because basically you can keep your barbarian, your fighter, your paladin, whatever.
You just put everyone in your party on that list. And then the first person that drops to 0 just doesn't
die. That's really good. I like that.
It's just like as soon as you form a party, hey, guys.
And these are...
You write your names real quick.
And these are all abilities you can use right from the beginning, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Unless I put that in there wrong. Pretty sure you can use those all from the get-go.
Just as soon as you meet up and you, like, you know, you feel it in your bones, you're going to have to be with these people for a while. Put your name in this book. Don't worry about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, speaking of which, if you were doing, say, an escort mission.
Yeah.
Where you were trying to get someone... My bad, that's a 9th level ability. I distinguished that properly.
You didn't.
Okay, so...
Farscribe is a 5th level one.
Oh. That's important.
That's important. And my bad, I didn't put those in my notes.
Your fault.
My fault. But, still, at 9th level, that's still a really good ability, even at 9th level.
Yeah.
And... You have to get this particular important person one place or the other. You can make sure they don't die. That's kind of important.
Now, speaking of bad transitions, it's time to go to break.
Yay!
Welcome to Realms of Peril and Glory, an all-new actual play podcast.
There are guided tours once a week. Come on, Darbrennan.
How about you, you filthy timepiece?
RPG is home to hilarious stories.
The thing that kicks off a really good tale is...
When they take their tops off.
Sorry? when you're reading, like, don't worry.
And thrilling adventures.
There's bad guys, there's an ogre. Probably best if you stay here. Sorry, I'll be back soon.
Why am I tied up?
That was your sibling, not me. Bye.
Each season is an all-new actual play story told collaboratively at the table, featuring guest players from the Magnus Archives.
I remember being in the water, and that was awful, and now I'm not in the water, and that's much better.
Wooden overcoats.
I am a snowman. I have one job, and that is to stand in place. I was doing that very well.
Yes, and she might come back 9 times more powerful with lots of food and kippers.
We fix space junk.
On the surface, you might look different, but you're very, very similar inside. And I can vouch for that.
And more.
What I am about to tell you stays in this room. Got it?
Don't happen know where there's, like, secret plans about meat and smoothies.
Ducks! Did you say ducks? Did you say ducks? Did you say duck?
You can find Realms of Peril and Glory wherever you listen to podcasts.
We're gonna have a good laugh, then we're gonna possibly cry, and then we'll grab dinner.
All right, so welcome to our shameless plug break.
Hi.
We have a Twitter account.
Is
our Gorky. Is at our Gorky. We have an Instagram account. Is at our Gorky family. If you want to talk about the show, just use hashtag #ThreePillarsCast. We also have, Gorky of the YouTube channel that either you're watching this on or it has a link in our podcast description. If you want to jump to it where you can see us, what we're doing. Not this part, because this part's all audio.
Woo!
But the rest of it, you can see our happy, smiling faces.
Smiley faces.
Or mine. And...
I'll beat you.
And, so it's called Our Gorky Family is the name of our channel. So catch us there. Like and subscribe. We'd appreciate it, of course. Our podcast is available. The podcast version, if you're watching this day on YouTube, is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Anchor, most of the
anywhere
podcasts.
Anywhere you can get.
Yeah, anywhere podcasts are sold, pretty much. So check us out there. We also have a live play D&D campaign that we do. Emma was running that one that's currently coming out right now. It's New Olympia.
It's so bad.
Like, we suck at everything, but...
Yeah, we're just bad at it.
We're hoping the next one we're better at, but, either way, if you still want to watch us play D&D, it's there. It's still pretty fun. It's a modern campaign, so I think you should check it out. I think most people will get a kick out of some of the bits there. I mean...
It's funny. Oh, I have problems with it now that I've, done a little more. But it's funny.
It's funny. If you ever wanted to have a Goliath from an extra plane deal with a cook from the modern world, there you go.
Especially if it's the good classic fell online.
Yeah, that would have been fun. We didn't know about that at the time. Yeah. Regrets. But either way.
That's your problem.
Okay. So of course we want to wish you all happy holidays, whatever you happen to celebrate.
Wear a mask.
And then, of course, yes, we want to encourage everyone to wear a mask.
Remember, this is recorded in 2020, so please make sure you wear a mask. It's for safety of others.
And most importantly, bah humbug.
But we want to put it out there because the vaccine is out now, but we want to remind everybody that we need to make sure we, make it to the point where we can get them. And we want everyone to have a good holiday, but also be safe. So wear your masks, be good.
Yep.
All right. So, is that everything?
Bah humbug.
Bah humbug. Bah humbug, losers.
Bah humbug.
So, we're back from our break. So, starting at 4th level, you gain the Eldritch Versatility feature. This is from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. When you reach a level in this class that grants the ability score improvement feature, this is a pretty common phrasing that you'll see in Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, you can do one of the following representing a change of focus in your occult studies. You can replace one cantrip you learned from this class's Patch Magic feature with another cantrip from the Warlock's spell list, which is pretty good. Replace the option, like, especially if you chose something that had poison early on, and later in the game when everyone's freaking immune to poison, it's basically worthless cantrip then. Replace the option you chose for the Path Boon feature with one of the feature's other options. So, you know, if you decide that that Path of the Chain just wasn't working for you, or the Path of the Blade wasn't beneficial for you anymore, you can change it up to something else. And if you're 12th level or higher, you can replace one spell from your Mystic Arcana feature, which we haven't gotten to yet, with another Warlock spell of the same level. So it just gives you a little more flexibility with an already fairly flexible class, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
If you make any changes that would make you ineligible for an Eldritch Invocation, you must also replace them now, choosing invocations for which you qualify. You can, in a way, use this to force yourself to change a bunch of invocations quickly. So, say you chose a bunch of invocations based on your patch boot. You could then switch over to invocations for your current patch boot, which, you know, could do a lot of changing all at once. So, it's either good or bad, depending on how you want to look at it. At fifth level, you gain access to the invocations that utilize the hex spell or a curse that's applied by other invocations or the Hexblade's curse. So all those can trigger these next invocations. But I thought I'd go over the hex spell because it's unique to Warlock. So if you've never played a Warlock before, you probably never have used this spell. It's going to remind you kind of like Hunter's Mark for the Ranger and stuff like that. It's a level 1 spell. It's a bonus action to cast. Has a range of 90 feet. Its duration is 1 hour. And basically what it does is you place a curse on a creature that you can see within range. Until the spell ends, you deal an extra 1d6 necrotic damage to the target whenever you hit with an attack. Also, choose one ability when you cast the spell. The target has a disadvantage on ability checks made with the chosen ability. So, if you have something that's going to trigger off of, you know, a savings throw or whatever, that can be good, too. If the target drops to 0 hit points, I may have said that wrong. If the target drops to 0 hit points before the spell ends, you can use a bonus action on a subsequent turn of yours to curse a new creature. So you can kind of keep bouncing this around, even if you got a bunch of small creatures. A remove curse cast on the target ends the spell early. At higher levels, when you cast a spell using a spell slot of 3rd or 4th level, you can maintain your concentration on the spell for up to 8 hours. When you use a spell slot of 5th level or higher, you can maintain your concentration on the spell for up to 24 hours. I don't know why you'd need it that much, but... And then you need to have a petrified Eye of Newt to make the spell work. But I don't think it uses it up. So there you go. So there's going to be two invocations that really apply to the hex spell.
At 5th level, you get Maddening Hex, which is from Xanathar's Guide Everything. As a bonus action, you cause a psychic disturbance around the target cursed by your hex spell or by a warlock feature of yours, such as Hexblade's Curse or Sign to Ill Omen, which we'll talk about soon. Have we talked about that yet?
No, we'll talk about it soon.
We'll talk about this soon. When you do so, you deal psychic damage to the cursed target and each creature of your choice that you see within 5 feet of it. The psychic damage equals your charisma modifier, minimum 1. To use this invocation, you must be able to see the cursed target and it must be within 30 feet of you. And also at 7th level, you get Relentless, which is also from Xanathar's Guide to Everything. Your curse creates a temporary bond between you and your target. As a bonus action, you can magically teleport up to 30 feet to non-occupied space, as you can see within 5 feet of the target cursed by your hex spell or by a warlock feature of yours, such as Hexblade's Curse or Sign of Ill Omen. Teleport in this way, you must be able to see the cursed target.
There you go. So, the other invocations that you can get at level 5 include Cloak of Flies, which is from Xanathar's Guide to Everything. As a bonus action, you can surround yourself with a magical aura that looks like buzzing flies. The aura extends 5 feet from you in every direction, but not through total cover. It lasts until you're incapacitated, or you dismiss it as a bonus action. The aura grants you advantage on charisma intimidation checks, but disadvantage on all other charisma checks. Any other creature that starts its turn in the aura takes poison damage equal to your charisma modifier, a minimum of zero damage. Once you use this invocation, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest. So that's pretty unique. That's not like based on a spell or anything. You just basically cover the flies. Then there's the Gift of the Depths, which is also from Xanathar's Guide and Everything. You can breathe underwater, and you gain a swimming speed equal to your walking speed. You can also cast water breathing once without expending a spell slot, and you regain the ability to do so when you finish a long rest. So this is a very exploration-based invocation here. The last one, Cloak of Flies, was... you probably call it, I suppose, a social interaction. Mm-hmm. Though you tend to use intimidation more in combat, you can use it outside of combat, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there. I'm not sure if you want to have a bunch of flies buzzing about you while you're talking to people, but there you go.
Hey, hello, sir. Mm-hmm. Hello, sir. How you doing?
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah, sorry, I was... You're making the fly buzzy noises. My bad. I'm dumb. Yeah, that would be a distraction, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Can you scroll?
Oh, sorry.
Scrolling.
Then there's Mire of the Mind. You can cast slow once using a warlock spell slot. You can't do so again until you finish a long rest. You know, as we've said before, I don't particularly like these. I mean, slow is a decent spell, but I don't know if I want to race the whole invocation just to do this when there's so many other ones that let you...
use an invocation and a spell slot.
Yeah, it feels like a lot. One with Shadows is another one. When you are in the area of dim light or darkness, you can use your action to become invisible until you move or take an action or a reaction, which I think is a lot better ability than using the slow spell. Obviously, this is good for all kinds of things. I mean, being invisible in dim light or darkness, you can really do a lot with this. This makes your character a lot more of a more roguish in ways, and I think that's kind of fun. Then, of course, there's Sign of Ill Omen, which we brought up in the Hexus block. You can cast Bestow Curse once using a warlock spell slot. You can't do so again until you finish a long rest. I mean, at that point, I don't know. I can't remember. Was Bestow Curse like any better? I don't know. Let's look it up real quick and find out. Yeah, so Bestow Curse works a little differently. It's a 1 minute duration. Let's see. Hex has concentration. So instead of having to concentrate on it, you just do it for 1 minute. It takes a whole action, though, as opposed to just a bonus action. You look like you have to touch them. Not liking this. And they get to make a saving throw. And then you either get to choose one ability score, and they have disadvantage in ability checks, which is similar to Hex. They have disadvantage on attack rolls against you, which can be beneficial. The target must make a wisdom saving throw at the start of each of its turns. If it fails, it wastes its action that turn doing nothing. Okay, that's kind of powerful. And while the target is cursed, your attacks and spells deal an extra 1d8 necrotic damage to the target. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's really worth it.
You cast them both at the same time and just kind of...
Yeah, I mean, double curse them real good, I suppose.
I'd use halfway curse.
Yeah.
And triple curse them.
Yeah, but it feels, I mean, you could, and that has its advantages, but it feels like, I don't know, I don't like that. I don't think I'd waste an invocation on that, to be honest. So no. Is this the next one? Okay.
Aren't you fighting a lot of, like, big, like single monsters? Like, if you knew we were going to fight a dragon soon, then you might want to take that.
Yeah. This doesn't have much any application outside of combat, really, though. And then Tomb of Levistus is also for Xanathar's Guide. I believe that's referring to the devil is encased in ice, like the seventh layer of hell, of the nine hells. As a reaction, when you take damage, you can entomb yourself in ice, which melts away at the end of your next turn. You gain 10 temporary hit points per warlock level. So at this point, you gain at least 50 hit points of temporary hit points, which take as much of the triggering damage as possible. So, you know, you're really using this as a reaction. Immediately after you take the damage, you gain vulnerability to fire damage, and your speed is reduced to zero, and you are incapacitated. These effects include any remaining temporary hit points. These effects, including any temporary hit points, all end with when the ice melts. And once you use this invocation, you can't use it again until you finish a short or a long rest. So it adds the whole short and long rest option, which is kind of nice. But, I mean, it's good. I mean, 50 hit points at the moment you can take it. It only gets better as you go. It is a good way to not die. But at the same time, you're taking yourself out of the combat.
Yeah.
For a whole turn, basically. Unless, of course, you know, they do a big enough blast that you it eats up the whole thing at once. Which, in case, it might be worth using. That vulnerability to fire might come back to haunt you, though, if you're facing the wrong enemy.
And finally, we have Undying Servitude from Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. We cast Animate Dead without using a spell slot once. Once you do so, you can't cast it this way again until you finish a long rest.
Okay, so now this is how everything should be phrased. Because you can cast Animate Dead without using a spell slot. That's great.
Yeah.
Once per day. I mean, that's a free spell. And that means a lot for a warlock.
Oh.
I mean, I don't like using Animate Dead myself, but hey, if I'm making an NPC, you need a warlock. That's going to be a gimme right there.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, you gotta create a skeleton or a zombie. That's pretty strong.
There you go.
Summon's level, no other requirements, invocations.
Okay.
Bewitching Whispers. You cast potions once using Warlock spell slot. Can't do so again until you finish a long rest. Dreadful Word. You cast Confusion once using Warlock spell slot. You can't do it again until you finish a long rest.
So both of these are obviously going to be your social interaction, kind of espionage, campaign kind of abilities. Like we said before, the warlock spell slot, not a big fan of that, but, you know, in the right campaign, you're going to want to use it, right? But.
Ghostly Gaze from Xanathar. As an action, you gain the ability to see through solid objects to a range of 3 feet. Within that range, you have dark vision, if you don't already have it. The special sight lasts for 1 minute, and it's until your concentration ends, and it's concentrating on a spell. During that time, you receive objects, ghosts, and spirit images. Once you use this invocation, you can't use it again until you finish a short or long rest.
Now that's cool. Yeah. I like that one. Be able to see through solid objects to a range of 30 feet, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Sculptor of Flesh. You can cast Polymorph once using Warlock spell slot. Can't do so again until you finish a long rest.
Okay, now this one I would use a Warlock spell slot on. Sculptor of Flesh is pretty good.
Polymorph is a really strong spell.
Yeah.
Trickster's Escape is from the Anthars. You can cast Freedom of Movement once and yourself without cleaning a spell slot. You have the ability to do so when you finish a long rest. That's really good.
Yeah, Freedom of Movement's a very good spell. And going to cast it once for free is quite good. What'd you ninth level?
Because you should only need it once a day.
Yeah.
Once a long rest. Because after you flee, you should take a long rest.
At ninth level, you get Ascendant Step. You can cast Levitate on yourself at will without expending a spell slot or material component, which is nice. Minions of Chaos, you can cast Conjure Elemental once using a Warlock spell slot. You can't do so again until you finish a long rest. Otherworldly Leap, you can cast Jump on yourself at will without expending a spell slot or material components. Whisper of the Grave, you can cast Speak with Dead at will without expending a spell slot.
Yeah, so Conjure Elemental, that's going to be more of your... mostly you're only going to be able to use that in combat. Ascendant Step, Otherworldly Leap, I mean, are going to be really good exploration stuff. You can really get around a lot. Not quite flying, but, you know, next best thing. And Whispers of the Grave, that's, you know, speaking with dead at will, that's a really, really good, you know, social interaction. You know, it's kind of like the Pie Maker from Pushing Daisies. Be able to use his ability at all times. That's great. I thought that was always the coolest thing about that show. And to be able to do that, it has this nice investigation qualities to it. And there's a lot of campaigns where that would be definitely worth the invocation. So then we go to a level 11 where we get the first new kind of ability. It's called the Mystic Arcanum.
Can I say Mystic Arcanum? A Mystic Arcanum, since Warlocks don't get a spell level after, level 5, Mystic Arcanum allows you to choose a corresponding spell from the Warlock spell list, and cast it once for long rest, without spending a spell slot, what spell you get to choose, you know, coordinates with your Mr. Arcanum level. So if you're at 11th level, you get your 6th level. If you're at 13th, you get your 17th level. Or your 7th level. If you're at 15th, you get your 8th.
And 17th, you get your 9th level.
Yeah.
Alright. So, we'll bring it up, but basically we're gonna phase by it. Oh, okay. So at 15th level, you get access to 4 more invocations that you can choose from. There's Master of Mirrored Forms. You can cast Ultra Self at will without expending a spell slot. Next is Shroud of Shadow from Xanathar's Guide. You can cast Invisibility at will without expending a spell slot. I mean, Ultra Self is really, really, really good. But Invisibility at will, that's really, really good. Obviously, you can use that for all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
In and outside of combat. Ultra Self is obviously more of a social interaction thing. Visions of Distant Realms. You can cast the Arcane Eye at will without expending a spell slot. I actually have no idea what Arcane Eye does.
Oh, so you just create a flying eye that you can see through. It has dark vision. Not that good.
Okay, yeah. So basically, it just gives you the ability to see. Does it see through darkness? I mean, magical darkness?
Just dark vision, that's it.
Yeah, okay. Wow, that's really not that good. If it can see through, like, magical darkness, I think it might be good. And you can move it around, so it has that.
Yeah, it can move around, and it lasts for, an hour, so you can... You know, it can go pretty far.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose if you're doing the right kind of investigation campaign, that might be good, but...
Just use my familiar.
Yeah, that'd be better. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's not bad, but I'm not sure if it's 15th level good.
Yeah, that's the
4th level spell. I mean, honestly, if didn't offer this at 7th level, I thought, maybe this would be good. Yeah. But I don't get it. Yeah. And there's Witch Sight. You can see the true form of any shape changer or creature concealed by illusion or transmutation magic while the creature is within 30 feet of you and within line of sight. Now that's great.
That's so strong.
I can see through polymorph. I can see through your invisibility. I mean, all kinds of good stuff there.
You can see through the sky cell.
Yeah, you can see through the master of mirrored forms of another warlock. So that's pretty good. 17th level, you get another Mystic Arcanum at 9th level. So Eldritch Master.
At 20th level, you get Eldritch Master, which means you can send 1 minute In trading your patron for A2, regain all your expended spell slots from your pack magic feature. Once you regain spell slots with this feature, you must finish a long rest so you can do so again.
Yeah, so basically you get to cast all your spells and then cast all your spells again.
Yep.
I mean...
It's kind of weak.
No, it's like a 1 minute short rest. That gives you back all your spells.
But at 20th level?
I mean, think about the monk. Remember at 20th level he just got more 4 key points at the beginning of every combat? This is similar. Really.
Yeah. Sorry, I know, a bunch isn't up. You know, like the druid's level 20 abilities? Gets a wild shape as many times as you want. There's a bunch of other OP 20th level abilities as well.
Well, but...
it's just kind of weak.
Yeah. I mean, if it let you recast all your Mystic Arcanum again, it would be really, really powerful. Because then you can cast a 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th level spell again.
Yeah.
But since you're only going to cast 4, you know, level 5 spells again, I mean, it's debatable on how good it is. I'm never going to play a level 20 character anyway, so I don't think I care all that much, but...
Yeah, level 20 is... No one cares. Level 20 is way too high.
You can defeat God at that point.
Yeah. Okay, so overall, before we wrap up the end of the episode, flavor-wise, I think the idea of a warlock is really fun. Obviously, it makes great bad guys, but I think even for heroes, it's good, too. And so I think it's a class I have not played before, but I think it's a class I think I'd enjoy giving a shot one of these times. Yeah. And I know from doing this episode, actually before we started, I thought that the Path of the Chain was really bad, but looking at the invocations it can cast, it can use, those invocations from Back to the Chain are actually very good.
Yeah.
I know, it's so strange. It's the weakest, you know, pack by itself, but then, you know, its invocations are still strong.
Yeah. And I think, and they all really line up well with it. Like, it's all, like, because then you're, like, in a campaign where you're not necessarily trying to kill everything, you're trying to investigate things, and it's like more political intrigue and stuff like that. Being able to hold monsters is actually a very applicable ability, and I just think that's strong and good, and I like that one.
Yeah. So.
All right, anybody else have any other thoughts, questions, opinions?
I think that should wrap everything up.
All right, well, that's the end of that episode. So, tune in next time where we're going to each make a character. I have combat this time. You have exploration, and Tyler has social interaction.
Jeez.
Thank you.
Jeez.
Thank you for watching, and we'll see you all next time. All
right. Bye.
Jeez.
Welcome to the Three Pillars of D&D podcast.
This episode,
I messed it up.
Okay. Welcome to Three Pillars podcast.
Episode, it's not a podcast; it's cast.
Welcome to Three Pillars cast. This episode, we'll learn how to sacrifice babies. Great intro.
What was that?
That would be a great
show. Hello!
I hate you!
Welcome to the Three Pillars of D&D cast. I'm your host, Jesse.
Okay, I'll be scary.
I'm trying to kill you. Okay. Y'all need to become slower at Google searching. I'm trying to play a game here. Still loading.
Stop that.
Y'all need to slower.
I'm not. I guess I'm the biggest nerd here.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about.
Cameron can't see this, but I'm signing a lewd gesture.